Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and in this hour, two world-famous detectives. Later on, we'll hear Sherlock Holmes, but right now it's The Adventures of Ellery Queen, an NBC episode from March 27th, 1943. It's The Adventure of the Circus Train.
Romo Seltzer presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Romo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective, in person. Ellery Queen again gives you a chance to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Then, at the point where he was able to solve the mystery, he stops the play, gives you a chance to guess the criminal's name. In the studio tonight, we have as our guests Mr. George R. Crowley, superintendent of the New York, New Haven, and Hartford Railroad Police Force, and Mr. F. Beverly Kelly, director of radio publicity for the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey combined shows. Mr. Crowley and Mr. Kelly have accepted Ellery Queen's challenge to solve the mystery before the solution is revealed. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective and your host for the next half hour.
Good evening. In tonight's story, we run across one of the boldest and most dastardly murders in our memory. A murder on a speeding train. And among our suspects are included a giant, a midget, and a fortune teller. I call it The Adventure of the Circus Train.
I'm sure glad this Chicago case is wrapped up, Inspector.
Yes, Bailey, it'll be good to get back to New York. Ellery, got our tickets?
Yes, Dad.
Ever know Ellery to forget anything?
Here's our Pullman. Oh, who's this?
I'm the station master. May I see your tickets?
Oh, what's wrong? Hi.
What's up?
Sorry, Mr. Queen. The Army's requisitioned all available space on this train. Your reservations are canceled.
Oh, canceled.
How about the next train, station master?
Well, the earliest accommodations available are on the special section of the 11:59 tonight, Mr. Queen. It has three compartments left.
We'll take them.
I'd better tell you about it first, sir. That section's carrying Marco's Mammoth Show, the Midwest circus outfit.
Oh, that'll be fun.
You mean we have to travel with tigers and elephants and get sawdust in our hair?
Not quite, miss. Your accommodations would be in the end car. It's an all-compartment car with a small lounge and bar at the rear. Mr. Marco himself travels in that car and his business manager, John Brady.
Well, we certainly don't object to traveling with Mr. Marco and Mr. Brady, station master.
But they're not the only ones in that car, sir.
Look, if I got to double up with a talking snake, I'll walk to New York.
Who are the others?
Well, there's Goliath. He's 8 foot tall.
Goliath? The circus giant?
Yes, miss. Then there's Captain Pinky. He's a midget. And Madam Zara. She's the circus fortune teller. They're nice folks. Been with Marco's circus a long time, but I thought I'd tell you.
Henry, ever since I was a kid, I've had a yen to travel with a circus. What do you say?
Well, we don't mind one bit, station master.
Okay, Mr. Queen, I'll fix it. Ought to be an interesting trip.
Why, this is solid comfort.
My, this lounge back here is awfully cozy, Ellery.
Yes, we should be pulling out soon, Nicky.
Mr. Marco, I hope we're not putting you out in any way.
Oh, can't expect normal conditions in wartime, yes. Inspector. Edward?
Yes, sir.
Edward, set him up.
Yes, sir.
We're having a little celebration, folks.
Well, in that case, maybe we ought to get out of the lounge and go to our compartments, Mr. Marco.
Yes, we don't want to spoil any plans you have.
No, I won't hear of it. Be mighty proud if you'd all join me, in fact.
Well, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, John.
Yes?
You say, did you tell him all about it?
Oh, I left the telling to you, Mark.
Folks, meet John Brady, my business manager.
Howdy, folks.
And this is Long Joe Stebbins, professionally known as Mr. Goliath.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Goliath.
Madam Zara, the smartest crystal gazer under the big tops.
How do you do?
And Captain Pinky, 44 years old, and you can put him in your vest pocket.
Any friend of Mark Markle's is a friend of mine.
Edward, pass the throwing bowl, pass it around.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Edward. Well, you three must be wondering what this is all about.
We are.
As you know, I've been in show business over 50 years. Well, Mark Marco's getting too old to run a circus.
I know,
but I am. Needs younger blood. So I've just sold Marco's Mammoth Show to John Brady here.
Yes,
Brady. John, here's the bill of sale. Whole work signed, sealed, and delivered.
Well, thanks, Mark. And here's my advance payment in cash. $30,000.
Why, Thunder Goliath, will you look at that? 3 $10,000 bills.
I ain't never seen so much money, Cap'n Pinky.
Money means trouble. I smell trouble.
I smell an Indiana farm and rest for my old bones, Zara. Well, folks, drink up.
You good help, Mr. Markham.
Oh, thank you.
1 minute to midnight, we're leaving on the dock.
How about a song for Mr. Markham?
For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow.
Pretty late, Maestro. How's about we hit the hazy way?
I suppose we may as well, Sergeant.
What's bothering you, Ellery? Why do you want to come out here on the front platform of the car?
To clear my head, Dad. There was an atmosphere in the lounge I didn't like.
You mean them expressions of gimme, gimme on the faces of the giant, the midget, and Madame Zara?
Oh, that's only natural, son. These circus people don't see $10,000 bills every day.
Not only circus people.
Gentlemen, sir.
What's the matter,
gentlemen,
Porter?
I was just cleaning up my bar in the lounge, son.
Yes?
I get the bell signal from Mr. Markle's compartment,
sir. Spit the pebbles out of your mouth, Edward.
I rang his bell. There's no answer. I tried the door. It was unlocked. I opened the door and I saw...
Speak up, Edward.
I saw...
The man's scared to death, Dad. Let's go see for ourselves. Come on. Here's Mr. Markle's compartment. Dad, look.
Markle.
His head.
Bashed in.
Murder.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our story. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more, but first, Ernest Chappell with a mystery of his own.
And it bids fair to be as baffling as any mystery Ellery's been up against. By the way, folks, what's your batting average? Mrs. Neely Jarvie of Lakewood, Ohio, is frank to admit that she and her family haven't piled up a very imposing score of correct deductions, but she says they still get a big kick out of trying to decide who done it. Ah, good for you, Mrs. Jarvie. That's what we like to hear. And here's something else we like to hear. But suppose I let you folks have it in Mrs. Jarvie's own words. She writes,
"We're never without Bromo Seltzer in our home.
Just send your letters to Ellery Queen, care of the station to which you are listening." And now, back to our story. It's a short time after the discovery of old Mr. Marco's body. The car has been locked, front and rear. Nikki has been awakened.
But, Inspector, how did it happen?
That's what we've got to figure out, Nikki. Ellery Veeley and I were standing on the front platform from the time the party in the lounge here broke up. And we know no one from the forward cars came into our car or left it.
And the two conductors were sitting at the end of the lounge near the rear platform, Nikki, checking their tickets.
And both conductors say no one got into the car through the back.
So, Mr. Marco must have been murdered by someone in this car.
That's the size of it, Nikki.
But who? Which one?
The two conductors alibi each other, and they both alibi the porter.
So the killer must be one of the four circus people.
That nice old man. Why?
Don't you remember Brady handing Marco $3 $10,000 bills in front of our eyes, Nikki?
And they're not in his wallet now or anywhere in Marco's compartment.
He was bumped off for that $30,000, Miss P.
Killer probably rapped on Marco's door. Marco let him in.
Visitor assaulted the old man, stole the money, and left Marco for dead.
But he didn't die right off. He managed to reach the porter's bell and ring it before dying.
What was the weapon, Inspector?
A man's shoe.
What?
Yes, a shoe.
A shoe big enough to ship freight in, Miss Porter.
A man's shoe. Size 22, Nikki.
Size 22? But a shoe that size, it must be the giant's. Goliath must have killed Mr. Marco.
And used his own shoe, Miss Porter? And to top it off, left it in Marco's room for us to find?
No killer would be so simple-minded, Nikki. The big boy's being framed.
Only question is, by who?
Well, Dad, we better start asking questions.
Yes. Billy?
Yeah?
Call them out of their compartments one at a time. While we're tackling each one, you search his compartment for that dough.
Okay, Inspector.
Well, son, this case is a cinch. Marco was killed for the $30,000. So when we find the cash, we find the killer. Oh, Mr. Clyde. Sorry the sergeant had to wake you.
What time is it for criminy's sake?
Ellery, he's hobbling.
You'd hobble too, Nicky, if you were wearing only one shoe.
How come you got on only one shoe, Mr. Glass?
Oh, darn if I know, Inspector. When I went to bed, I put my shoes in that little doojigger on the floor of the compartment.
I know.
It's a little closet, you know, yeah, that the porter can open from outside and take out your shoes and shine them during the night.
Yes?
Mm-hmm. Well, sir, just now Mr. Beale comes fetching me, and I look for my shoes, and that shoe thing, doggone if somebody ain't stole one of my shoes. What am I going to do? It's the only pair I got.
We hit Pittsburgh in the morning, Mr. Goliath, so we'll send out for a pair of shoes for you then.
Huh. Ain't a shoe store in Pittsburgh or anywhere else carries size 22. Oh, Inspector, what'd you want me for?
Come into Marco's room, Goliath, and I'll show you.
Sure.
Ellery, I can't look.
Stay out in the corridor, Nicky.
Well, where's Mr. Marco, Inspector? What's under that piece of newspaper?
This?
Mm-hmm.
Your shoe, Mr. Glass.
Well, I'll be... What's blood doing all over? What's under that blanket?
Mr. Marco, he was murdered tonight with your shoe.
Murdered?
What happened in there?
Goliath fainted.
Henry, revive this 8-foot he-man.
Right, Dad.
And Nicky, call John Brady in here.
Here's Mr. Brady, Ellery. And he's hobbling, too.
Somebody stole one of my shoes.
From your shoe compartment, Mr. Brady?
That's right. I found two shoes in it, all right, but one of them's a woman's. Here, look. Hey, what's going on? Hey, Mark, you in there?
Just a moment, Mr. Brady. Nicky, is this woman's shoe Mr. Brady just found in the shoe receptacle yours?
No, Inspector. It must be Madame Zara's.
Nicky, you better go fetch the Zara woman.
All right.
Suppose you go in now, Mr. Brady, and see Mr. Marco.
I don't get all this. Marco. Marco.
Put the blanket back, Ellery.
Right, Dad.
But who? Why?
The $30,000 you handed Marco tonight, Mr. Brady. That's why.
Inspector, Madame Zara's hopping mad about her shoe, and I mean hopping.
I don't care for jokes, if you please. Mr. Brady, is this your shoe? I just found it in my shoe compartment, and one of mine is gone.
Let me see. Yes, sir. That's my shoe. Here's yours.
Thank you. What was I awakened in the middle of the night? Has anything happened to Mr. Marco?
Why do you ask that, Madam Zara?
Yes, of course. Mr. Marco is lying under that blanket. He's dead. Isn't he?
Yes, Madam Zara. Look.
I should have warned him.
You knew Marco was going to be knocked off?
Before retiring, I looked into my crystal ball. It never lies. I saw an old man lying there dead. Now I realize it was Mr. Marco. An old man with blood on his head.
Don't mind her. She always talks like this.
You saw this in your crystal ball, you say?
With blood on his head.
Did you also see Marco's murderer in your magic ball, Madame Zara?
No. But I could.
Really?
If the conditions were right, yes, Mr. Queen.
Hey, cut that out. Seeing murderers in a hunk of glass. Zara, go back to your room. You too, Mr. Brady.
Oh, very well, Inspector.
Crystal ball. Where's Veely? In the name of Houdini, isn't he back with that 30 grand?
Haven't you forgotten someone, Inspector?
Who, Nicky?
Captain Pinky, the midget.
Oh, the midget couldn't have done it. He's too tiny.
He could have stood on something, Dad, and that big heavy shoe would be a murderous weapon even in the hands of a child.
Mr. Marco, what's all the excitement about?
It's Captain Pinky. Hello.
What the devil's going on? Why is everybody rushing around like crazy?
It's an unusual trip, Captain Pinky. By the way, anybody swipe your shoes?
My shoes? Heck no. What would anybody want with my shoes? But blast it all, what's happened?
Mr. Marco's been murdered, Captain.
Mr. Marco? Murdered?
Oh, dear, he's crying.
Midgets, giants, crystal balls.
Inspector.
Really? Well, where'd you find the money?
I didn't find it, Inspector.
You did?
I searched every compartment, no dough.
Could you find your head?
Huh?
Where are we now?
A half hour out of Fort Wayne, Indiana.
At the next stop, wire Pittsburgh to have some detectives waiting for us when we pull in tomorrow morning. And give this car and everybody in it a vacuum cleaning, Bailey.
even if the Pittsburgh boys have to go to New York with us.
Very well, sir.
Preston Barr. I'll show you how to solve this case, Ellery. Find that money, and you've got Marco's murderer.
Philadelphia.
Time's keeping Billy and those Pittsburgh men. They're searching after 10 hours. The money must be in this car.
Dad. Dad, I've got it.
Where the money is, son?
No, I mean the explanation for that shoemaker.
Huh?
Killer wanted a weapon that couldn't be traced to him. So he stole one of Zara's shoes from her receptacle.
But realized it was too light as a weapon.
So he rifled Brady's shoe receptacle.
And then decided he wouldn't use either one's. He'd use Goliath's shoe. That would make a weapon. So he stole Goliath's shoe.
And in putting back Mr. Brady's and Madame Zara's...
He made a mistake and mixed them up.
Inspector Queen.
Yes? Oh, Goliath.
How much longer do I have to walk around in my socks? I want my shoe.
We're checking it for fingerprints, Mr. Goliath. You'll have it back by the time we reach New York.
Well, would you wash the blood off?
Sure, Mr. Goliath.
Thanks,
Harry, I made up my mind. I'm arresting Zara.
Why Zara, Dad?
She knew Marco was dead, the only one who did. How could she have known unless she bumped him off?
Well, that is a puzzle, how she knew. Dad, she claims she might see the criminal in her crystal ball. Why not call her bluff?
See whom she accuses.
That's an idea. Okay, we'll try it.
I have a hunch Madame Zara has something up her sleeve, and it isn't a crystal ball.
Madame Zara, why is it you people can't ever do anything in the light?
We consult other worlds. Light is a disturbance. I must have darkness.
Focus, focus. Conductor.
Yes?
Switch the lights off here in the lounge. But tell Sergeant Billy to have both ends of the car watched.
Yes, sir.
You will all join hands.
This is silly, Ellery.
She knows it's silly, too, Nikki. Zara's trying to tell us something, using the seance as a cloak.
There go the lights.
I must have quiet, or my crystal will tell me nothing. Come. Appear, you who shed Marco's blood. Appear in the crystal of truth.
Ellery, it's getting a faint glow.
Phosphorus, Nikki. Quiet.
The one who spilled the blood of old men. He takes shape. His face, it comes out of a mist. In a moment now, I see him. I see him!
Much obliged, Madame Zara. Who done it?
The spiller of blood is...
Madame Zara, why do you stop?
Tara.
Hey, what's
the matter?
Inspector, turn on those lights.
Yes, sir.
Hillary, do you think she's...
Here are the lights. Zara.
She's sitting so still.
Zara, come out of that now.
She's in one of her trances.
Oh, Hugh, I thought she was dead, Mr. Brady.
Gosh, Captain Pinky, so did I.
Wake up, Zara.
Thank goodness.
Whose face did you see in that thing?
I must not tell you. Not yet.
Oh. And why not yet?
The time isn't right. I... Perhaps later.
Madame Zara, you're a first-class fake.
Fake? I'm not going to stay around here and be insulted.
All of you, back to your compartments.
Oh, I don't think this, Inspector.
So that's that, Ellery.
Well, Inspector.
Oh, really? Well?
Why am I pooped?
Find the money, Sergeant.
Those Pittsburgh guys and me, we've gone over this car 3 times. No dough.
What?
Look, Inspector, we tore those blame compartments practically apart. You saw how we searched this lounge, the bar, the porter's pantry, the light fixtures, the radio, the front. Well, do you want me to go on?
How about the people, Sergeant?
Yeah, head to toe. Clothes, luggage, cigarettes. We even examined Zara's crystal ball. No, we searched the 2 conductors and the porter, too. No dough.
Really, you're a crook's idea of Santa Claus.
Huh?
Start all over again. I want that $30,000 before we reach New York.
We're in. End of the line. Ellery, where do you suppose that stolen money is?
I can't imagine, Nikki. Poor Dad.
That must be the inspector's own squad waiting on the platform.
Now, is everybody here?
Yeah. Brady, Goliath, Pinky.
Where's Madame Hocus Pocus? That Zara woman.
She isn't here, Inspector.
But you must know we're in. The train stopped.
That's up to now. Feely, get her out here.
Okay. Hey, Zara! Inspector!
Nikki, don't look.
Dead. Zara's been bumped off.
Head smashed in with a crystal ball.
Feely, hold everybody.
All right. Nobody wait.
Who'd have thought?
But why Madame Zara?
It's clear now. We wondered how Zara knew about Marco's being dead. Don't you see? Zara must have spied on the murder in the corridor last night. She must have seen the killer go into Marco's room with Goliath's shoe.
And why didn't she tell him?
Because she had her own axe to grind, Nicky. The seance was a veiled threat to the killer. She was warning him she could give him away if she chose.
So that he'd split the 30 grand with her. But instead, he split her head open.
Wait a minute. Of course. Now I see it all. We've been blind.
Ellery.
In a moment, you'll learn what the correct solution is. But first, the search for an honest man has come to an end in the person of our own Ernest Chappell.
Oh, me. What Ellery undoubtedly means is that I'm not going to make a single claim for Bromo Seltzer that isn't absolutely true.
All right, inside. Come on. Boys, no one gets in until this is over. All right, sit down, you people. Okay, Inspector.
Here's the way this case stacks up. We know the killer wanted a weapon that couldn't be traced to him. So what did he pick? Somebody else's shoe. Mark that. Somebody else's shoe. So whatever shoe or shoes he stole last night belonged to innocent people, not to the murderer.
Makes sense to me, Ellery.
Hush, Nicky, I want to follow this.
Whose shoes were stolen last night? Madame Zara's, so she's innocent. Mr. Brady's, so he's innocent. And finally, Goliath's, so he's innocent. Who's left who could be the guilty man? Only Captain Pinky.
Captain Pinky, where'd you hide that dough?
But I didn't kill Mr. Marco.
Dad, haven't you left out one possibility?
What possibility, son?
That the murderer wanted you to think just what you do think. That the crime was committed by the one person whose shoe was not involved.
He deliberately involved all the shoes but Captain Pinky's.
He was framing Pinky?
I'm afraid so, Dad. The big point of this case is one you made yourself repeatedly. That to find the killer, we had to find the money he stole.
But we didn't find the money, son.
And why didn't we?
Because it wasn't in the car.
But it was in the car, Dad. It had to be.
Hurry, the car was practically demolished. Everybody and everything in it was searched.
That can't be, Dad, or the $30,000 would have been found. Obviously, then, one place was not searched. So that place is where the missing money must be.
What place? Where didn't we search, Maestro?
Did you search the weapon, Sergeant?
No answer.
The weapon that killed Marshall?
Who'd ever think of searching the weapon?
Exactly. That's what the killer figured, too. That we wouldn't dream the hiding place of the money was the very shoe which bashed poor Marco's head in.
But, Ellery, what good did that do him? How could you expect to get hold of the money again? That shoe was a murder weapon held by the police.
Therefore, Nicky, the murderer could be only one person, the owner of the shoe to whom it would eventually be returned.
Eventually? Goliath asked for his shoe even before we reached Penn Station. And I just gave it to him. Goliath? Take that murder shoe off.
Oh, you're wrong. I didn't do it.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no.
Come on, Dad.
I didn't do it.
Really? Tear out that shoe lining.
Yep, sir. And here they are.
Three $10,000 bills.
Clever crime, Goliath. Because who'd be foolish enough to use his own shoe as a murder weapon and then leave it behind to be found? You knew we'd believe you innocent. You knew we'd therefore return the shoe with its hidden money to you.
But there's one thing Goliath didn't know. He didn't know he was traveling with Ellery the giant killer.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery. I want to thank Mr. George R. Crowley and Mr. F. Beverly Kelly for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. And we have for both Mr. Crowley and Mr. Kelly a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer, an autographed copy of my new mystery novel, There Was an Old Woman, just out this week, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Oh, Ellery, I certainly enjoyed that story. I bet you can't top it next week.
I'll take that bet, Chappie, and I'll tell you what it's about in just a moment.
Okay, that gives me time enough to introduce my friend and your friend, the one and only educated train known to man, the talking Bromo Seltzer train.
I did it three ways.
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
Yes, you can't beat that for good sense. Well, now, Ellery, my lad, how's for next week? You got something nice and cheerful?
Very, Chappie. In fact, it's a story about a perfect gentleman. That is perfect, except for one little obsession.
Hey, what's that?
He wants to murder his wife.
Oh, pleasant job.
So, Chappie, you better listen again next Saturday for the adventure of The Human Weapon.
And don't forget the other great Bromo Seltzer show friends, Vox Pop, the show that travels America. Next Monday, Vox Pop travels to Cheyenne, Wyoming, where Parks Johnson and Warren Hull will interview a Flying Fortress crew just back from bombing Germany. Consult your local paper for the time and station. Music for The Adventures of Ellery Queen is by Charles Paul. Production is directed by Bruce Kamen.
This program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen on Tuned to Yesterday from March 27, 1943 on NBC, starring the very versatile actor Carlton Young, who in the same year was heard in broadcasts of the Treasury Star Parade and the Cavalcade for Victory, which was a program to begin the Third War Loan Drive, which was an effort to raise funds for the Second World War, where he shared airspace with the likes of Charles Boyer, Burns and Allen, Bing Crosby, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Senate Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with a case I call The Lady Spectator. I had a late call from a philanthropist named Carter who said he'd received an old diary that was of great historical importance. He asked me to examine, and I did. Written in a lady's hand, the diary described the meetings of the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia with marvelously written eyewitness accounts of the events. I turned the diary back and said, "The lady writes well, but it's a fake." In a moment, I'll tell you why.
It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levinier.
In the case of The Lady Spectator, the sessions of the Constitutional Convention at Philadelphia were held in secret. She couldn't have been an observer. So whoever wrote the diary didn't bone up on history.
Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
And now time for Sherlock Holmes, starring Ralph Richardson as Watson and Sir John Gielgud as Holmes. This part of NBC's Sunday night lineup at 9 o'clock. At this point in time, Sherlock Holmes on radio had been on in some form for 16 years on the network. From May 29, 1955, the episode is The Blue Carbuncle.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The original and immortal stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized anew, with Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson and Sir John Gielgud in the role of Sherlock Holmes. And now, the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Christmas in our London of the 1880s. And in the glow and glory of it, I called at Baker Street to see my old friend Sherlock Holmes.
Compliments of the season, Holmes.
Who's that?
Compliments of the season, Holmes.
Oh, Watson, it's you. Good evening, how do you do?
Well, I must say that's a deuced cold greeting for the time of year. But don't you believe in the Christmas spirit?
Yes, yes, of course I do, my dear fellow. It's only that I'm profoundly engaged. My mind was elsewhere. Close the door, Watson, and come in. There's a confounded din from the street. Yes, that's much better. Sit down, won't you? Now, help yourself to a whiskey and soda, Watson.
Oh, thank you.
And just tell me what you think of that.
Think of what?
That. Hanging on the back of the chair there. I've been contemplating it for the last half hour.
Well, it's only a hat. A simple, hard, black hat.
Just so.
You best sit down with me by the fire and tell me all about it. And I'll brew some punch.
Excellent, excellent, Watson. You know where everything is, of course. And meanwhile, I'll tell you the tale of this hat. And I ask you to consider it, Watson, not as a battered old billycock, but as an intellectual problem.
Well, then.
You know Peterson, the commissionaire of the hotel on the corner?
But of course. Why? Is it his hat?
No, his trophy.
Huh? Trophy?
Well, he found it. The owner is unknown. It arrived here, Watson, in company with a fine fat goose, which I have no doubt at this moment is roasting merrily in front of the Petersons' fire.
Oh, well. A goose and a hat. No doubt the connection's obvious.
Now, the facts are these, Watson. Peterson, who's a very honest fellow, as you know, was returning about 4 o'clock this morning from some small seasonal jollification and walking homewards down the Tottenham Court Road.
Oh, stir the fire a bit, will you? My hands are full.
Certainly, Watson. Of course. In front of him, there in the gaslight, Peterson suddenly saw a tallish man with a stick walking with a slight stagger and carrying a white goose over his shoulder. As he reached the corner of Warren Street, this man was suddenly set upon by a crowd of roughs. One of them knocked his hat off, and as he raised his stick to defend himself, he accidentally swung it against a shop window and smashed the glass.
Well, what happened next, Holmes?
Well, Peterson, who was still wearing his commissionaire's uniform, rushed to the man's assistance. But the fellow, shocked at breaking a window and seeing a man in uniform running up to him, dropped his goose and took to his heels. The roughs did the same, leaving Peterson master of the field of battle. He brought both bird and hat to me. There was a card on the bird's leg with "For Mrs. Henry Baker" written on it, and the initials H.B. are written on the label inside the hat. But of course there are some thousands of people named Baker in this great city of ours, so it has been my little occupation for this last hour or so to try and deduce the exact identity of this one.
From his hat?
Yes, Watson. The owner of this hat, Watson, highly intellectual, fairly well-to-do, but in the space of the last 3 years seems to have fallen on evil days. He used to have foresight, but he has less now than formerly. I suspect he's taken to drink, which would also perhaps account for the fact that his wife no longer loves him.
Oh, my dear.
Middle-aged, goes out little, has grizzled hair, which he anoints with lime cream, and has been to the barber's lately. It is also extremely improbable that he has gas laid on in his house.
Ah, come on. Now, you're surely joking.
Not at all.
I've seen you at this kind of thing before, of course. But this is going too far. His wife, Holmes. You said she'd stopped loving him.
The hat hasn't been brushed for weeks, my dear fellow.
Ah?
Well, when I see you, Watson, with such an accumulation of dust on your respectable headgear, I shall expect you to be returning to your old quarters here within the next day or two.
You know, you've an answer for everything. Wonderful, wonderful. Except the gas. The fact that there's no gas laid on in his house. Now, that really is impossible.
Not at all. One tallow stain, or even two, might come by chance. But when I see no less than five, I think there can be little doubt that the owner must be brought in frequent contact with burning tallow. Yes, he probably walks upstairs at night with his hat in one hand and a guttering candle in the other. Anyhow, he never got tallow stains from a gas jet. Satisfied?
Promise so. It's really, really most ingenious.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
Well, honestly, it seems rather a waste of your talents that there's been no crime committed. Nothing but the loss of a Christmas goose.
That goose, my dear fellow.
Miss Holmes! Miss Holmes, are you in?
Hello, what's this? Who is it? Yes, come in.
Miss Holmes.
My dear Peterson.
Oh, it's the goose, sir.
Well, has it returned to life and flapped off through the kitchen window? You're as white as a sheet.
Oh, well, see here, sir, here. Look what my wife found inside its crop.
Watson, look.
This is treasure trove indeed, Peterson.
Yes.
A precious stone. One of the biggest I've ever seen.
It's more than a precious stone, Watson. It's the precious stone. The blue carbuncle.
Great heavens. The Countess of Morcar?
Precisely. Missing for 5 days and with a descriptive advertisement every morning in the Times about it. And a reward of £1,000 for its recovery.
£1,000? Oh, love a duck.
A goose, Peterson.
Oh. A blue carbuncle.
Yes, I remember now. Lost at the Hotel Cosmopolitan.
That's it, and they've arrested some plumber fellow who's supposed to have taken it from the Countess's jewel case.
£1,000 reward. Oh, God.
I was reading about it only just now. Yes, here we are. The Hotel Cosmopolitan jewel robbery. John Horner, plumber, 26... was brought up on the charge of having abstracted from the jewel case of the Countess of Morcar the valuable gem known as the Blue Carbuncle.
What else, Watson?
Well, it seems that this fellow Horner was taken up to the Countess's room by her maid, a girl called Catherine Cusack, to do some kind of repair.
Mm-hmm.
When the head attendant of the hotel went in, a fellow called James Ryder, to see if the work was finished, he found the jewel case was lying empty and that Horner had gone. But he gave the alarm, and Horner was found by the police, and they arrested him. The case has been referred to the assizes.
Mm. Well, then, the only problem remaining to be solved is the sequence of events leading from an empty jewel case in a hotel room at one end to the crop of a goose in the Tottenham Court Road at the other. Just give me a pencil and that slip of paper, will you, Peterson?
Huh? Oh, yes, sir. £1,000. Oh, blow me down. Here, sir.
What are you going to do, Holmes?
Find the owner of this hat. H.B. Henry Baker. Yes, he began as a joke, and now he's become a mystery. We'll try the simplest method first. An advertisement. How's this, Watson? Read it.
Found at the corner of Warren Street, a goose and a black felt hat. Mr. Henry Baker can have the same by applying at 6:30 this evening at 221 Baker Street.
Clear and concise, I think. Yes, if you've quite recovered from your astonishment, Peterson.
Sir?
Just run down to the advertisement office and have this put in all the evening papers, will you?
All of them, sir?
All of them. Oh, and by the way, Peterson.
Sir?
On your way back, just see if you can buy another goose.
Another goose, sir?
Yes, as near as possible, the same size as that one that your family is about to devour.
Oh, yes, sir. Are you going to keep the stone, sir?
Yes, here, in my strong box. And I'll just drop a note to the Countess to say we've found it. Hurry up, Peterson.
Oh, yes, sir. £1,000. Cool. Of course, stone of crows.
No, the geese, Peterson.
Mr. Henry Baker, if I'm not mistaken. Do come in, Mr. Baker.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Sit down, won't you? Pray sit down.
Thank you.
This is my good friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Mayn't I help you to a whiskey and soda, Mr. Baker?
Oh, thank you. I'll leave out the soda, if I may, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, of course. You see, Watson.
Congratulations, Holmes. The very man as you described him.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, nothing, sir. Forgive us. A private matter.
Now, Mr. Baker, you've come, haven't you, in answer to my advertisement. Is this your hat?
This? Oh, yes, sir, undoubtedly.
Then pray allow me to return it to you with my compliments. The bird, I'm afraid, we've been compelled to eat.
What? Oh, dear.
Careful, Mr. Baker. You'll spill your drink.
It was quite a necessity, I'm afraid, since in these modern days we seem to have lost the art of refrigeration in which our Elizabethan ancestors were so adept. However, there's this other bird here on the sideboard to which you're extremely welcome as a replacement.
That's uncommonly kind of you, sir.
Not at all. Of course, we still have the feathers and the crop of your own bird, if you'd like to take them, too.
Oh, you're an honest man, sir, but the disjecta membra of my late acquaintance are hardly likely to be of much use to me. But I will have one more drink, if I may. Very small.
Most certainly. Would it trouble you, Mr. Baker, to tell me where you got that uncommonly fine bird of yours?
Not at all, sir. I'm a member of a Christmas goose club run by the landlord of the Alpha Inn near the museum.
The Alpha Inn, Watson?
Ah.
I got it there in exchange for my weekly fourpences, which I've been paying since last April.
Well, that's good value for 12 shillings, Mr. Baker, eh?
Yes. I really am most grateful to you for your kindness, sir. I was set on by some roughs in the street, and I lost it.
All's well that ends well, Mr. Baker. We were fortunate enough to find it, so here's your hat.
Thank you.
And here is your new bird. Oh, I've put the old ticket onto it, the one that was tied to the other goose's leg, marked to Mrs. Henry Baker.
Oh, how nice of you. I'm much obliged, sir.
Well, not at all. A peace offering, Mr. Baker?
A peace offering, sir, in point of fact, to my better half.
Ah, quite.
Good night, sir, and thank you again.
Good night, Mr. Baker.
Good night, sir.
Well, so much for Mr. Henry Baker, Watson.
Well, it's quite evident that he was innocent, of course, from the trap you laid. I mean, about the feathers and the crop.
Yes, evident. I suggest, Watson, that we turn that proposed dinner of ours into a late supper. I'll tell Mrs. Hudson, she'll forgive us. And in the meanwhile, let's follow up the clue of the Alpha Inn.
By all means, Holmes, I confess I'm most intrigued.
Yes, I'm afraid we shall have to battle our way out through those infernal waits who are making night so hideous on our humble doorstep. Come, Watson, we've work to do this Christmas Eve.
Morning, who comes at the door? It's Frost.
In a moment, we continue this week's story in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now we continue The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes with Sir John Gielgud as Sherlock Holmes and Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson.
It was a bitter night, and so we drew on our ulsters and wrapped our mufflers about our throats. We swung through the doctor's quarters of Wimpole Street and Harley Street, and so along the great thoroughfare of Oxford Street, where the crowds were thinning now, to Bloomsbury. And there, in a forgotten corner, we found the Alpha Inn. And from the rosy landlord, learnt that the geese for his Christmas club had come from a dealer named Breckenridge in Covent Garden. Yes, here's the market, Holmes. What was the name of the goose dealer?
Breckenridge, Watson.
Yeah,
there it is, you see? The largest stall of the lot. There's the name written up over it.
Yes, just in time. They're closing up. Horsey-looking fella, isn't he?
What's that you say, horsey? Good for you, Watson. That fact might come in useful. Ah, good evening, Mr. Breckenridge. It's a cold night.
Cold enough, I reckon. Glad to get finished.
Sold out of geese, I see.
Let's have 500 tomorrow morning.
Ah, that's no good, I'm afraid. We want one tonight.
Here, there's someone that stall over there with a gas flare. Now, excuse me.
Oh, we were recommended to you particularly, Mr. Breckenridge.
Oh? Who by?
By the landlord of the Alpha Inn in Bloomsbury.
Yes, you supplied him with some incomparable birds, he told us. Where did you get them from, by the way?
Now, look here. What exactly are you driving at, mister?
Why, nothing. Only that I wanted to know who sold you those geese.
I'm dashed if I tell you, then. You're another one to pester me, are you?
Another one? What do you mean?
When I pay good money for a thing, that should be the end of it, I say. But it's where are those geese, and who did you sell those geese to, till I'm sick of it. You'd think that lot were the only geese in the world, the way some folk keep on at me about them.
Well, I can assure you that we've nothing to do with any other people who've been making inquiries, Mr. Breckenridge. In fact, all I'm concerned with is a little bet I've made.
A bet?
Just so. I'm always ready to back my opinion, and I've bet a fiver with my friend the doctor here that the bird we ate from the Alpha Inn was country bred.
You've lost your fiver then, because it was town bred.
No, 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 it was nothing of the kind.
It was, I tell you. God, do you think you know more about fowls than I do when I've been in the trade, man and boy?
I tell you, it's country bred.
Each town. Here, will you take a bet with me too?
With pleasure. A sovereign, every penny of it.
Right, it's on now. Where's that ruddy book of mine? Here it is. Here, just look in there, Mr. Cocksure.
Well, what's this?
That's the list of the folk I buy from, see? And what I do with the stuff when I bought it. Now then, look at that name there, do you see?
Can you see it, Watson, in this light?
Yes, yes. Mrs. Oakshott, isn't it?
That's right, Mrs. Oakshott. And what's the address, eh?
117 Brixton Road. Egg and poultry supplier.
Brixton Road, Mr. Iron Mighty. And what's the last entry under it, eh?
December the 22nd, 24 geese at 7 and 6.
And who were they sold to, eh?
Sold to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha at 12 shillings.
Right. And so what do you say now, Mr. Blooming Poultry Fancier?
Well, I must say I could have sworn it was country bred. All right, you win, Mr. Breckenridge. There's your sovereign.
Thank you.
Come along, Doctor. I owe you five, I think.
Yes, you do.
Easy money, that's what I say. Well, good evening, gents, and Merry Christmas.
Good evening, Mr. Breckenridge.
Yeah, come on, Charlie. Give him a lift.
Well, Watson, let's stand here by the gas lamp for a moment. I want to think.
I tell you, I don't know nothing about it.
Well, you're ready well all to, then.
Thank you. You get out of here, I'll say.
I'll say well I want.
You're what in
here? Hello, what's going on?
Is there some kind of a quarrel, Holmes, back there at Breckenridge's stall?
Oh, yes, so there is. Let's see what's the matter.
Look, look, that little rat-faced fella, do you see? Breckenridge is threatening him.
Now, I tell you, I've had enough of you and your blooming geese.
I was only asking you.
Yeah, well, you've asked the same before and you've got the same ruddy answer. You and anybody else.
One of them geese was mine, I say.
Well, you can ask Mrs. Blooming Oakshot for it.
She told me to ask you.
Yeah, then you can ask the King of Prussia for all I care. You get off now. Go on, I'll knock your teeth out, mind you. Here,
here. Here. Oh, give it a bit of tea, Harry boy.
Go on, you blooming nosy Parker. You.
The little fellow's coming this way, Watson. It looks as if we've saved our trip to Brixton.
You want me to collar him? Turn by if he gets nasty. He looks a bit of a shrimp, though. Not much trouble.
Here, my man, not so fast. I'd just like a word with you.
What? Here, who are you? What do you want?
I couldn't help overhearing your little disagreement with the good salesman over there, and I think I might be able to assist you.
How do you mean? How could you know anything?
Who are you, eh?
My name is Sherlock Holmes, and it's my business to know what other people don't know.
Well, you can't do anything about this.
On the contrary, you're trying to trace some geese which were sold by a Mrs. Oakshott to that man there who sold them to the landlord of the Alpha Inn, who got rid of them through his goose club, of which Mr. Henry Baker is a member.
What? Why, you're the very man I've been looking for, Mr. Holmes. Oh, I can hardly tell you how much it means to me.
Watson, be good enough to signal for a four-wheeler, will you?
Yes, certainly.
I think, my friend, we'd better discuss this whole matter in some cozy place rather than in the crowded street. We'll go to my room, shall we? Oh, what's your name, may I ask?
My name's Robinson. John Robinson.
No, the real name. It's always so awkward doing business with an alias.
All right, then. James Ryder.
Ah, head attendant of the Hotel Cosmopolitan, yeah. I believe. Quite so. Yeah, you have the cab, Watson.
Just coming over, Holmes.
Splendid, splendid. Now, would you mind just standing on Mr. Ryder's other side and just take him by the arm, will you? He might have a fancy to go for a little walk. Well, now, here we are. The fire looks very seasonable this weather. Do put some more coal on, would you, Watson? Now then, pray take the basket chair, Mr. Ryder. You look chilly. Well, now, Mr. Ryder.
Yes, sir?
You want to know what became of those geese, Mr. Ryder, or rather of that goose. For I fancy it was only one that you were interested in, a white one with a black bar across its tail.
Oh, if you could only tell me, sir, I'd be that grateful. Mm-hmm. It's really mine, you see, sir. It was sold by mistake.
And a most remarkable bird, if I may say so, Mr. Ryder. Watson, hand me over my strong box, if you please.
Yeah.
That bird laid an egg after it was dead, Mr. Ryder. Eh? The bonniest, brightest little blue egg that ever was seen. I have it here.
Oh, merciful heaven!
The game's up, Ryder.
Steady, man, steady, or you'll be in the fire.
Hang on to him, Watson.
It's all right, Holmes, I've got him. Almost fainting, poor devil. I'll get him a brandy.
Poor devil, eh? Heavens, what a worm the fellow is. He's not got blood enough to go in for felony.
Well, there you are, my man. Drink it up.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Oh, what have I done? What have I done?
You know perfectly well what you've done, Ryder. It only needs one or two more links, Watson, to make the case complete. Now then, Ryder, who told you of the Countess of Morker's jewel, the blue carbuncle?
It was Catherine Cusack, sir. I swear it was her idea.
The Countess's waiting maid, Holmes.
Exactly. And so you invented some excuse to send that unfortunate young Horner into the Countess's hotel room, and after he was gone, you rifled the jewel case, raised the alarm, and put the blame onto him.
Yes, sir, I did, sir. Ah. Oh, for heaven's sake, have mercy, Mr. Holmes. I never went wrong before. It was Cathy was to blame.
Get
oh,
up
please,
off the floor, man. It's no good kneeling to me. You didn't show much mercy to Horner, did you?
I'll leave the country, sir. The charge will break down against
get
him.
Get up! Get up! Watson, help me onto his feet, for heaven's sake.
What I want to know is how the stone got into the goose, Ryder. There, man, take another drink.
Well, it was all a mistake, you see, sir. Once I had it, I wanted to hide it somewhere. It seemed to burn a hole in my pocket. So I went to my sister, you see, to think things out.
Your sister?
Maggie. She married a man called Oakshott.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And she fattens fowls for the market at Brixton.
Ah, Oakshott, eh?
Well, I was thinking it out in her yard, see, smoking a pipe-like. And I remember that Maggie had promised me a bird for Christmas, so I had an idea.
Ah, you forced the stone down the bird's throat?
Yes, sir. Well, just then Maggie came out to see what I was up to, and the bird got free for a minute. But I went and caught it again, and Maggie and I killed it. I had a notion to take the stone to a chap I knew up in Kilburn that told me once he knew how to get rid of stolen property. And I thought it'd be safe from any search in the bird's crop, you see, sir. Even if the police did take it into their hands to stop me. They weren't all that certain about Orna, you see.
Ah, when you got to Kilburn, it wasn't there.
No, sir, so I rushed back to Maggie. By that time, all the other birds had gone to market, see. There was two of them with barred tails, you see, sir. I'd caught the wrong one after it had got away. I've been at that stall at the garden ever since, trying to find out where it had gone. Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Ah. Well, what are you going to do, Holmes?
I'm not quite sure, but I think all things considered, it might be best to... Get out, Ryder.
What? You mean...
I mean get out, ma'am.
Oh, heaven bless you, Mr. Holmes.
I don't want to hear any more from you. Get
oh,
out.
Thank you, Mr.
Get
Holmes.
Get out!
Heaven bless you, sir.
Well, well, a most singular and whimsical business, my dear Watson.
Ah, my dear Holmes. Shouldn't you have turned him in?
Well, when all's said and done, Watson, I'm really not retained by the police to supplement their deficiencies. As soon as I send the stone back, the case against Horner will collapse at once. There'll be no witness.
But you're committing a felony, you know.
Well, it's just possible that I'm also saving a soul.
I don't believe he'll go wrong again. He's too scared. Besides, Watson...
Well?
Well, this is the season of forgiveness, man. Listen. 12 o'clock. It's Christmas Day. Oh, pass me some of that delicious punch of yours, won't you? And tell me you forgive me, too.
Forgive you? In heaven's name, for what?
For being so surly yesterday morning when you offered me the compliments of the season. I return them now with all my heart. And here's your health, old friend, with my glass upraised. A Merry Christmas, my dear Watson.
A Merry Christmas, Holmes.
God save Her Gracious Majesty.
Amen.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch. Sir Ralph Richardson played the part of Dr. Watson, and Sir John Gielgud that of Sherlock Holmes. The program was produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday, broadcast on May 29th, 1955 on NBC. And that closes this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.